I'm very sorry, I can't make it in person. It's due to teaching constraints. And so the term just started and my students, they need me. Anyway, so let's move a little bit to a slightly different topic, which is holography. Of course, that's in some sense also related to effective field theory, but it takes a slightly different angle. And I'll give a review and tell a little bit about the implications for quantum gravity, also slightly more recent ones. Okay, so the overview of my short talk is that I'll start by briefly reviewing the ADS-CFT correspondence and also its generalizations to more general examples of gauge gravity duality, in particular of finding gravity duals of renormalization group flows in quantum field theories. And then I'll also mention two other topics that are of current interest in the context of quantum gravity and holography. The first one of two, which is number two of my talk, is the relation between information and its quantification and gravity on the other side. And then finally, I'll say something about recent work on discrete holography. Okay, let me start by reviewing ADS-CFT. And so ADS-CFT is a wonderful example of a duality. So let me say quickly what a duality is. So let's consider the situation that we have a physical theory having two different but equivalent formulations. That means that we can write one particular theory where by theory in quantum in theoretical physics, I mean a particular action or Hamiltonian. And then let's assume that there's a different theory written in terms of a different action that describes the same physical system as the first theory does. And so if that's the case, then this would be my definition of the word duality, which of course appears in many different contexts in physics and mathematics. So if I have two different theories given by two different actions and different ways of writing the degrees of freedom, but they both describe the same physics, then I would call this a duality. And that implies that the two theories have the same dynamics and there's also a one-to-one map between the states. Now, this is a fairly frequent situation in quantum field theory, but the exciting aspect of a gauge gravity duality is that it relates a theory without gravity, namely a quantum field theory, a gauge theory, in this duality sense to a gravity theory in higher dimensions. And so this is the only example of such a duality that relates a theory with gravity to a theory without gravity. Now, a very radical person might say, well, if gravity is completely equivalent to a theory without gravity, then in some sense it can't be fundamental. And maybe this is the fundamental theory, the quantum field theory. But that's a very radical point of view, and I'm not going to take this radical point of view in this talk. And I should, of course, also mention that everything I'm going to say here is going to be for negative cosmological constants. Okay, so gauge gravity duality, generalizing the ADS-CFT correspondence, is a conjecture which follows from a low energy limit of string theory. And the word duality also encompasses the aspect of a strong weak coupling duality, meaning that if the quantum field theory involved in the duality is strongly coupled, then the gravity theory will be weakly coupled. And furthermore, the holographic principle, which of course plays a very important role in quantum gravity in relation to black holes, is also one of the decisive features of the ADS-CFT correspondence, in the sense that a quantum field theory in say d dimensions is mapped to a gravitational theory in d plus one dimensions, such that we may view the quantum field theory as living on the boundary of this higher dimensional hyperbolic gravitational theory. Okay, let me go into slightly more detail. So if we look at the ADS-CFT correspondence, where ADS, of course, stands for anti-de Sitter space. So this is a space with a negative cosmological constant and constant curvature. And CFT is a conformal field theory. Now, here are the two guiding, there's two guiding principles. So the holographic principle, which I already mentioned, and also the symmetry content of the theory. And in fact, these two guiding principles mean that we have the same amount of degrees of freedom in the gravity theory inside the anti-de Sitter space that you can see here, but also in the boundary theory defined on the blue outside of this cylinder, which, and these two theories actually have the same amount of degrees of freedom and also the same symmetries. As I said, anti-de Sitter space is a space of constant negative curvature and has a boundary, the blue in this picture. And since ADS-CFT comes from string theory, we are not just in five dimensions, but actually in 10 dimensions. And so there's also an internal space, which in the simplest case is just an S5. And so the symmetries of this anti-de Sitter space are actually, if we go to Euclidean signature, they are they form the group SOD plus 1, comma 1. But if we prefer Lorentzian signature, this would be SOD, comma 2. And now the important fact is that the operators in our CFT in the dual quantum field theory actually transform in the same way under in representations of this same symmetry group. So the conformal group in D dimension is the same as the isometries of ADS in one dimension higher. Now, then also we have the symmetries associated to this S5. And so these are an SO6 symmetry, which is isomorphic to SU4. And so this internal symmetry determines the supersymmetry of our conformal field theory in four dimensions. And so in the end, we end up with an n is to four SUN super Young-Mills theory, where this is n here, this straight n is the rank of the gauge group and the curly n is the n of the supersymmetry. Okay, so let me briefly tell you how this duality between these two theories originates from string theory. So, and the starting point, because this is coming from superstring theory, is in 10 dimensional space, so really 9 plus 1 dimensional space. And so the starting point is to consider D3 brains. And these D3 brains are now the physical system in senses of my duality that I introduced here. And so, in fact, they have two dual descriptions, one in terms of open strings and one in terms of closed strings. Now, because they're the same physical system and there's two different Lagrangians describing them, then according to our definition, there's a duality between these two theories. And in fact, these open string picture, according to the rules of string theory, will give us a supersymmetric SUN gauge theory, namely this NX2-4 theory that I just introduced to you in four dimensions. Because so D3 stands for 3 plus 1, 3 space and 1 time dimension, and D stands for Dirichlet boundary conditions on these strings. And so the fluctuations of these open string, the massless modes, will actually give rise to this particular gauge theory. On the other hand, we can also view our same physical system, the D3 brains, in this closed string picture. And so the closed strings are the elementary excitations of gravity. So this is the gravity picture of these brains. And you may view them as very heavy solitonic objects that solve 10-dimensional equations of supergravity. And they curve, because they are so heavy, they curve the space around them. And now there's a particular low energy limit where the curved space actually takes precisely this geometry of being ADS 5 times S 5. And in this very same limit also, the rank of the gauge group will go to infinity, such that we get a kind of semi-classical theory here. And a further step in the limit is that we go to point-like particles, which means in a very low energy limit case, we will have point-like classical particles on the space ADS 5 times S5. And now if the duality is supposed to hold at this level, it will also hold at this level. So I can summarize this picture in this diagram. So at very high energies, we begin with the duality based on these D3 brains between an SUN quantum gauge theory, and on the other hand, on the quantum theory of gravity, which is a string theory. And then we perform a particular saddle point approximation, which gives us here the large n limit of our gauge theory. And on the other side, it gives us a classical gravity theory of point-like particles on the other side. And then since we have this commutative diagram, if the duality holds at this level, it should also hold in this low energy limit here. Let me be a little more precise now about, so actually this limit, which is denoted by these two arrows, goes in a two-step process. And let me explain this two-step process to you. So in fact, there's a few facts from string theory that I would like to mention. So one is that the string coupling is actually equal to the Young-Mills coupling squared if we go to this low energy description of these brains in terms of the field theory. Also, because we take a large n limit, it's convenient to use the so-called Tuft coupling given here with n the rank of the gauge group. And if we take n to be very large, then we get an expansion in terms of topological objects or in terms of different genus. And at each level of genus, then we have an expansion in this lambda, which was already found by Tuft a long time ago. Now, an important ingredient from string theory is that the Tuft coupling actually will be related to a length scale, which actually in this case will correspond to the radius of our anti-de Sitter space divided by the inverse string tension, which is essentially the length of the string to the fourth power. And that's a very important relation that we get from string theory that relates our Tuft coupling to geometrical objects. And so now there's different levels of the correspondence. So the strongest form is to conjecture that the duality between n is to 4 super Young-Mills theory and type 2b string theory on this geometry holds for any value of n and lambda, which means on this side that we would have an arbitrary string coupling and also a string theory where the string tension, inverse string tension, is not zero. Unfortunately, that is not a theory which is under very good control because it's a string theory in a curved space background in a non-perturbative regime. So I mean, it's not really known how to do any calculations here. But fortunately, there's actually two limits that we can take. One is to send n to infinity and keeping lambda fixed but arbitrary. And in that case, if we send n to infinity, only the planar diagrams contribute to this expansion. And so in that sense, we get a large n expansion of our field theory. And this corresponds to a classical string theory, because that also means that the string coupling will go to zero and but still extended objects. And then there's yet another limit where we look at the strongly coupled version of our theory. And in that case, this means that alpha prime also goes to zero in units of the anti-de Sitter radius. And so this means that we go to point-like particles. So and that would be a classical theory of gravity theory of point-like particles. And so this lowest line is the form of the correspondence that is under the best control and where many explicit calculations can be done. Although I should mention that in investigations of integrability of in the context of ADS-CFT, they would happen at this level. Okay, so two more facts I would like to mention before I move to the flows is that the duality should really work at the one-to-one level of operators and in the field theory and fields in the gravity theory. So there's a one-to-one map between these, which is referred to as the dictionary. And in fact, we can identify the generating functionals of the field theory and the gravity theory. And then we can actually test the proposal of the ADS-CFT correspondence, for instance, by calculating correlation functions. And so we can formulate ADS-CFT in an equation, which you can see here. And this text below is exactly the same content as this equation. So let me just read this. So the generating function for correlation functions of particular composite operators in the quantum field theory, this generating function coincides with the classical tree diagram generating function in supergravity if the boundary values of the gravity fields are identified with the sources of the quantum field theory at the boundary. Okay, so and that allows us to do a lot of computations, and in particular, we can also generalize this idea to less symmetric cases. And that leads to the idea of the holographic minimalization group flows. So the original ADS-CFT correspondence involves this NX24 super Young-Mills theory that I just introduced, whose field content is one gauge fields, four fermions, and 6 real scalars, all in the adjoint representation of the gauge group. And that's a theory which has the property that its beta function vanishes identically to all orders in perturbation theory. And so we may take this theory to be our theory, the UV fixed point of our renormalization group flow. And now, in fact, we can not only construct a gravity dual of just NX24 theory, but also of RG flows that are generating by adding relevant operators to this original theory that we have at our UV fixed point. So we perturb by relevant operators preserving NX21 supersymmetry, and the best understood example in this context is the so-called Lee Strasser flow, where in terms of NX21 superfields, we add this potential. So there in NX24 theory, there's 3 chiral superfields, 1, 2, and 3. And so we add this potential term and then a mass term for 1 of the 3 chiral fields. And actually, so that's a relevant operator that perturbs us away from this UV fixed point. And so then we can actually, due to this large amount of supersymmetry, calculate the beta function of the gauge coupling of the original theory and the beta function of this coupling H here and also of the mass term. And then, so that's a special feature of supersymmetry that we can write down all these expressions explicitly to all orders in perturbation theory. And then we actually can find a solution for which all these beta functions vanish. And this gives us an IR fixed point given by these values of the anomalous dimensions. So, and so in fact, we can drive our flow to this IR fixed point and actually study the behaviors of this field theory at the fixed point. And there's, for instance, a C theorem which tells us that the coefficients of the conformal anomaly will satisfy this relation between the IR and the UV, which is actually, in fact, in agreement with the C theorem. And so for this, if our starting point is the NX24 super Young-Wills theory, then A and C, the coefficients, 2 coefficients of the central charge in 4 dimensions are actually the same in the UV, and they remain throughout the flow. And so the conformal anomaly takes this particular form. And for NX24, actually, C takes the value n² over 4 with n the rank of the gauge group. Now, all of this can be reproduced on the gravity side. And so now we can write down an RG flow in homography. And so that's shown on the slide here. Now, I should say right away that I'm taking this particular limit where both n and lambda go to infinity. And this means on the gravity side, I'm entirely in the classical regime. Now, I'm one of the tests of the ADS-CFT correspondence in the original form before switching on the flow is that from this gravity action, setting the scalar to a constant and the potential just to the cosmological constant, then I can actually calculate the conformal anomaly by carefully regularizing this action at the boundary. And in this case, the coefficient here is the 5-dimensional Newton constant together with the ADS radius to the 3rd power. And so if I insert all these relations that I introduced before, namely those, then I recover exactly the same result on the field theory side. Namely, then I just get n² over 4. Okay, so this coefficient is essentially n² over 4 if I use my holographic dictionary. That's for the UV fixed point, so the NX24 theory. But now if we perturb by allowing the scalar to run along the flow, then we get a so-called domain wall flow. And this you see here in this graph. So R is our radial coordinate of the deformed anti-de Sitter space. So for anti-de Sitter, this function A of R should be linear. And I take a function that is linear both here near the boundary, which corresponds to the UV of my field theory, and also here in the infrared, which corresponds to the IR of the dual field theory. And then since we have a domain wall, it has a kink in the middle. And similar, we consider this phi actually is the source for the trace F² term in our field theory action. And for this, we also consider such a domain wall behavior. And so then we can actually solve the supergravity equations motion that we get precisely from this action, which realizes exactly the same symmetries as this Lee-Strassner flow. And a further ingredient is that we can actually, using the results of this paper, we can, from the second order equations of motion, obtain a first order equation, which is a gradient flow, which we may then interpret as our RG equation. So, and this is done by writing this potential here in terms of a so-called superpotential, which is this W. R again is the coordinate which is perpendicular to the boundary of the anti-de Sitter space, which goes into our ADS space. And then here is our gradient flow that determines the running of the coupling in terms of a derivative of the superpotential. And then further equations of motion from the gravity side also tells us that the derivative of this function A of R, which is here in our metric, is also given by the superpotential. Now, solving all these equations for this particular example with the symmetries of this Lee-Strassner flow, then this coefficient here will flow in the IR to precisely the same value, which can, so this is a non-trivial test, precisely the same value as we calculated on the field theory side. And so that's a very beautiful example, holographically realizing these symmetries and also the flow. But of course, we should remember this is in the limit of the ADS-CFT correspondence where everything here is in the classical gravity regime. Okay, so in the remaining, I guess I have something like probably 5 to 10 minutes. Let me just briefly mention two further currently very interesting domains of holography and which are of relevance for quantum gravity. And one, the first one is the relation to quantum information. So there, the one of the very relevant quantities, so-called entanglement entropy. And so we consider the case that we have a product Hilbert space for which we can define a reduced density matrix by tracing over one of the Hilbert spaces when considering the total density matrix. And then the entanglement entropy, which for instance, we can define for space regions A and B, which tells us how much the states in the two are entangled, is given by this expression here, which is the von Neumann entropy applied to this reduced density matrix. Now, following this paper by Ryu and Takayanagi from 2006, there has been quite a development in using quantum information concepts in the context of the ADS-CFT correspondence. And so they actually showed that there's a holographic realization of this entanglement entropy, which just corresponds to the area of this minimal surface, which ends actually on this boundary between the regions A and B that I've shown in the previous slide. So here there's A and B in the plane of the slide, and now I turn the plane of the slide to this gray area here, and my entanglement in the field theory is between those areas. And so as these authors postulated, the entanglement entropy should then correspond to the minimal area of this surface, which enters the hyperbolic space. And there are some very nice tests of this. For instance, in 1+1 dimensions, both quantities can be explicitly calculated. And the result in the conformal field theory in 1+1 dimension is that the entanglement entropy is given by this expression here, where L is just the length of this entangling region. So this is for a constant time slice. So in 1+1 dimensions, the entangling region is just the length. And C is the central charge of the CFT. And sorry, this is exactly reproduced by this Ryu Takayanagi formula in the dual gravity side, where again, so this is a UV cutoff. And again, so in this kind, the cutoff was replaced by a boundary cutoff in the radial direction in our gravity space. Now, again, with this relation between the central charge, the ADS radius, and the three-dimensional Newton constant, the area of the surface exactly reproduces this result. So that it really coincides to the two calculations, one in terms of the density matrix, one in terms of the geometry, give exactly the same result, which is very beautiful. And in this low number of dimensions, it's also possible to extend this to find a temperature by placing a black hole into the dual gravity theory. Okay, so now let me come to some more recent developments in this context and of relevance for quantum gravity. So one of which is the factorization puzzle. So if you look at this picture here, this is actually a picture of an eternal ADS black hole. So where there's now a black hole placed into a global ADS metric, which means there's two boundaries. And so we can think of a CFT being defined on this side and another CFT being defined on that side, and the time goes in different directions on the two sides. Now, the puzzle is as follows. There's a so-called factorization puzzle here, which is as follows. The two CFTs have disjoint Hilbert spaces since there is no interaction between them. So we should have a Hilbert space which factorizes in this way. On the other hand, if we believe in ADS CFT, then it should be dual to a gravity theory for this entire geometry. And then we have one Hilbert space for one wormhole-like structure. So this is a, you can think of this as a non-traversable wormhole if somebody comes in from this side or from that side. And so this Hilbert space then does not factorize. And there seems to be an apparent contradiction. Since before I told you in ADS CFT, we should have a match between the dynamics and also the Hilbert spaces on the two sides. So there seems to be a contradiction, but there has been recent progress in terms of formulating this problem in a way which makes it more amenable to a possible solution. And that's based on these so-called von Neumann algebras. So this is a concept of algebraic QFT. For classifying operator algebras with respect to their entanglement properties. And in context of ADS CFT, this has been recently studied by many, many authors, and very important results have been obtained. So let me briefly say, so how much time do I have? Can you just tell me? Hello?
5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. So so there's actually there's three types of these von Neumann algebras. Type one, which is the standard case in quantum mechanics, where there's just a finite dimensional Hilbert space. So there's a density matrix that can be defined, and there's also a trace prescription. So in the sense that there is a functional that is invariant on the cyclic permutation of the arguments. And this also admits irreducible representations of the matrix and the trace. Then there's a type two where there's a trace prescription, but which does not act irreducibly. And the type three is when there's no trace prescription at all. So that happens generally if there's an infinite dimensional Hilbert space, for instance, for any quantum field theory, also free quantum field theories. So that's the generic situation. So in the case I had before, we see this because we need this cutoff here to make a meaningful definition of the entanglement entropy. Okay, so now many authors have studied the transition between type 3 and type 2 for Neumann algebras for this eternal black hole, which is supposed to be, or is conjectured to be dual to this two copies of the CFT. And it was found by Witten 2 years ago that including 1/n correction gives rise to a type 2 algebra with vanishing center. And so that allows for a well-defined trace functional for one particular state. And so this is very interesting because the 1/n correction will then take us from this type 3. From this type three case to this type here. And so in some paper that I wrote with my collaborators here in Würzburg is that we actually took a geometric phase approach that says we looked at the topology of the Hilbert spaces and considered whether there's a non-exact symplectic form. And in fact, because the two times here run in two directions, so two observers jumping in here, they will disagree on the direction of time. And that gives a singularity which really gives rise to a non-exact symplectic form. And this non-exact symplectic form then in turn, if you integrate over it, the volume form of it, and the integral over this volume form leads to a so-called Berry phase. And as we showed in this paper, the trace function is proportional to the Berry phase. And so that gives a topological handle on this Hilbert space and also on the properties of this trace functional. Now, the fact that the wormhole Hilbert space doesn't factorize is related to the fact that it has a non-zero geometric phase. And so this means that there's no trace definition in this case, and we have a type 3 from Neumann algebra. Except if we consider them a maximally entangled state, so a TFD state, as indicated by this blue line here, then in fact, for this case, as we showed, the geometric phase vanishes. And since the trace functional is proportional to the Berry phase, this means if it vanishes, then it means that we have indeed a cyclic functional. I should say it vanishes when evaluated on the commutator. Okay, so then if it vanishes when evaluated on the commutator, then the vanishing indicates that we have actually a meaningful trace definition. And then we again go from the type 3 to the type 2 from Neumann algebra. And so of course, finally, what we would like to have to see this entire factorization is to go to a type 1 from Neumann algebra, but that's very difficult to do in quantum gravity yet. Although this formalism gives a lot of new handles. But there's actually an analogy with an interacting two-spin system. So if we take a very simple system of just two interacting spins, okay, they are coupled to each other, two spin and a half particles, and we do exactly the same scenario, we calculate the entanglement entropy. And so there's two important quantities, the coupling between the two spins and the magnetic field here. And this parameter alpha essentially is the ratio between the magnetic field and the coupling. And then we find three different scenarios. So there's the case when there's no entanglement, so when there's no interaction between the two spins, and in that case, the entanglement entropy is zero. But then we can construct the so-called entanglement orbit. So that's all the states in the Hilbert space that have the same entanglement entropy, which is zero in this case. And there we find that for these two spins, if they don't interact with each other, this orbit is just a product, a factorized space. And we can show that in this case, the Berry phase, which is calculated according to this formula is maximal. Then if, on the other hand, if we have maximal entanglement, this happens when the coupling is very large, then the entanglement in this case is log two, then we get a non-factored structure. And so then there's intermediate entanglement. We also have a factored Hilbert space, but there's various intermediate values of the Berry phase. So at least we have a kind of analogy between the wormhole and going from type 3 to type 2. And here in this case, going from no entanglement to maximal entanglement in this very, very simple spin system. And I think that's an interesting development. Okay, I'm almost done. In the last minute, let me just say that another area that I've been working on quite a bit and I would really love to discuss in the context of this workshop also in the next couple of days is to establish holography for hyperbolic tilings. Okay, so we discretize our hyperbolic space, for instance, by taking heptagons of which three meet at each corner. And then we get a particular discretized version of our hyperbolic space. And I'm out of time here for explaining some of the details. Let me say that we used some results also from people at Perimeter here. So there's a connection to tensor networks that we can construct for a ground state at the bound. So we have a spin chain here at the boundary, which is, let me go to the conclusion because I have a nice summary there. Okay, so we have a spin chain at the boundary of the system, which realizes the bulk tiling construction principle at the boundary. And that leads to an aperiodic spin chain, of which we can determine the ground state using an RG approach. And so we have a tensor network, which is associated to this ground state. And so this was this picture here, the green lines are this tensor network. And so we have a ground state represented by this tensor network, and this gives us a handle on bulk reconstruction. So, and the connection to quantum gravity is that now, if we want a duality in the sense that I introduced in this talk, on the other side, we want the gravity dynamics on this tiling. And Of course, that's very much of dynamical triangulations. Although in this case, we don't really have triangles, we have heptagons, but okay, fine. We could look at some fluctuations about this particular background. And so, of course, in quantum gravity, these triangulations in the dynamical case play an important role. And so that would be some motivation to look at these also in hyperbolic spaces. All right, sorry for going over time. Let me just flash my slides, but I think I should just stop here and ask more questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have time for one or two quick questions, please. Abhay.
In the discussion for the entanglement at the end, I mean, when you sort of explained that this 1 upon n terms mm-hmm. had to be included in order to go to type 2 from type 3. But in your work of Bailey's phase, where is that coming in? Because...
Ah, okay, very good point. Let me go back. I think I should share my slides again. Sorry. Moving. Ah, there it is. Okay. Yeah, that's an excellent question. So, okay, I would need to go into more details.
We can do it at the discussion session if you like.
Maybe we can go there. But there's a connection to these von Neumann algebras, and the question is, so that the key feature is whether the center vanishes or not, and that's also related to whether there's a Berry phase present or not. So that's the short answer. But I can explain more details later. Maybe I'll give more details later in the discussion session.
Okay, there is a question up there.
Thank you very much for the nice talk. I was wondering about the motivation for the discrete holography case. Mm-hmm. Could you think of a length scale which would then be the relevant one? I guess if we are on the CFT side, then there's no gravity, and so we wouldn't have a Planck length to be defined on this. On the side of the duality, or what would be the length scale?
Yeah, okay, so that's an excellent question. Of course, the answer really comes from studying the symmetries of this geometry. And of course, this breaks the isometries I had before. So before, I mean, the central ingredient of the of dualities, holographic dualities, is that the symmetries of the isometries in the bulk and the dynamics at the boundary match. So that was the guiding principle for the continuous case. Now, of course, in this case, if we look at these polygons, then there's only a remainder of this conformal symmetry left, which goes under the name of Fuchsian symmetry. And so essentially what we have here at the boundary, I mean, remember this is non-compact, we have to stop here at some particular step if we want to do some concrete calculations. Then we get a spin chain, and of course there's a length scale associated to the spin chain, but then also we would need to look at some representation of this Fuchsian symmetry at the boundary as a guiding principle of our theory. But that's still a bit hard to do because not very much is known about these representations because it's a infinite but discrete group, and there's not a lot of literature on this. I mean, there's a lot of about Lie groups, and there's lots about crystal groups, but these non-compact discrete groups, there's not very much known yet. But okay, my answer is, I mean, okay, the length scale would be the separation of these spin chain nodes, and to go really into great detail, one would need to study more the symmetries, and it's a bit hard because the representations are not under such great control. But I should say, mathematicians have looked at this. There's a lot of beautiful mathematics, and there's actually a proof by Mathilde Macaulay that the entanglement entropy at the boundary scales with the Hausdorff dimension of this geometry in the middle if even more directions are added to make a fractal. There's also a relation to the so-called piadic holography, which is a special case of this. And I should also say, as a fun fact, that condensed matter physicists are interested in, actually, this is a quote, artificial material. Of course, you can't have such a lattice in a concrete solid, but there's models based on electrical engineering of such geometries, and which are studied in the lab even. So it's a topic which is of interest for to many people from very different backgrounds, and so definitely the study also beyond quantum gravity.
Okay, thank you. I think we should stop here, as a matter of fact, because time runs against us. So thank you very much. Remember that there will be a session this afternoon for the next of questions and discussion. Thank you very much. We have a 25 minutes coffee break, so we'll be here at 11:30 sharp.